Today's daf is Bava Basra, daf Kuf Ayin Aleph, and we have three lines from the top of daf Kuf Ayin Aleph Omer Aleph. So at the end of yesterday's daf, we began the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Ayin Aleph Beis. The Mishnah discussed Misha Pora Mikzas Choyvoy, Ruvain loaned Shimon $10,000. Shimon paid back $5,000. So part of the original loan was paid back. He was Pora Mikzas Choyvoy. But part of the loan is still outstanding. And the question is, what do we do with the original shtar? On the one hand, the malva still needs a shtar because Shimon, the loiva, still owes him $5,000. But then again, the original shtar reflects a $10,000 loan, which is in fact not the real dollar amount because part of it was already paid. So the Mishnah mentioned two opinions in the Tanakh. Rabbi Yehuda says, Yachlev. Rabbi Yehuda says, we take the original shtar, we rip it up, we call the original Eidim, we let them sign this new shtar that we're going to write. The new shtar is going to be dated on the same date of the original shtar, and it's going to reflect the new shtar amount. So if the original shtar was January 1st, 2015, $10,000, we're going to tear it up, we're going to write a new shtar, January 1st, 2015, for $5,000. It's going to be the original Zman. These Edim have a right to sign it. All we're doing is we're Yachlef. We're replacing the original shtar with the new shtar. Rabbi Yossi says it's not what we do. We leave the original shtar intact. And the Malva is going to have a shtar that says that Shimon, the Loiva, owes him $10,000. When in fact, he really only owes him $5,000. What prevents the Malva from being able to collect the full $10,000, we give the loiva a shayver. We give him a receipt that says that he already made payment of $5,000. So when the malva pulls out the shtar that says that the loiva owes him $10,000, the loiva is going to subsequently pull out a shayver that says he already paid $5,000. As a result, we're going to accomplish everything we needed to accomplish. The Gemara said, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. Rav said, Ein halacha loike Rabbi Yehuda, v'loike Rabbi Yossi. I have a third opinion. I feel that Rabbi Yehuda is not the correct opinion, and Rabbi Yossi is not the correct opinion. What is the halacha? Elo bez de mekaren hashtar v'kois v'leit shtaracha mizman rishon. The Rashbam explains that Rav's pshat is very similar. It's eerily similar to Rabbi Yehuda's pshat. There's just one difference. The difference is that whereas Rabbi Yehuda said that the malva, the loiva, the edim, the soifer, the lawyer, they can all be machlif the shtar on their own. They have the authority to do it by themselves. Rav argues and Rav says, no. You want to be machlif the shtar? That's the right thing to do. But you're going to have to go to Beis Din. Only Beis Din has a right to write a new shtar, predate the shtar to the date of the original loan amount, with a loan amount being reflected with the payment that was just made. Beis Din has a koyach because of Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. But if you want to do this outside of Beis Din, that's wrong. So whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds Yachlif, the Malvin, the Loiv, they could do it on their own, Rav says, I agree, the Mahalach here is Yachlif. It's not to write a Shoiver, it's to rewrite a new loan. But whereas you, Rabbi Yehuda, say this is something you could do outside of Beis Din, I hold you can't do it outside of Beis Din. And the Gemara said, why? And that was really the top of Kuf Ayin Aleph. Because Bishleim Beidini, Bishleim Beis Din, Alim Lefkuyim Amoina. They have a Koyach Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. Ela Eidim Sha'asu Shlichusan, Chayzrim Va'isin Shlichusan. Could Eidim sign on a shtar after they already signed the shtar? You would say, why not? What's the big deal? So Rav seems to be saying the Svara. Once the Eidim, who were instructed by the Malva and the Loiva to witness, to testify, to be Edim on this transaction, said Edus, their Haggadah Edus in this case was their signature on the shtar, they don't have a right to be Edim a second time. It's not something they can do. Maybe the Malva and the Leiva will instruct them a second time to do it, so let it be a new shlicha, so to speak. The problem with that is that you're dating it 2 years ago, and you cannot be an aid now and sign on something that happened 2 years ago, because that would be a shtar muktim, and we know a shtar muktim is possible. We'll see a lot more about that. The neshech the daf shtar meucher is kosher, shtar muktim is possible. So the only way really for the edim to sign would be based on the tzivui that happened originally when the original loan took place, when the edim signed originally. The problem is they did their shlichus already, and for these edim, based on the original shlichus, to testify a second time, that's not something they could do. Edim sha'asu shlichuson chayzrim va'isrim shlichuson bitmiya. That's not something you could do. If you want to do it in Beis Din, that's a whole different deal. Hefker Beis Din has a right to take money from Reuven, give it to Shimon. That's a special privilege Beis Din has. But outside of Beis Din, says Rav, that's something you cannot do. Freik the Gemara, three lines from the top. The loy, is that true? Once edim say edus, they can't say Eidos again? As if to say, if Edom signed on a shtar and something happened to the shtar, they wouldn't be able to sign on the shtar again. Edom have a right to sign even 10 shtaris on one field. So if Edom sign on a shtar, shtar matana, shtar mecher, whatever exactly the shtar was, and something happened to the shtar, they can sign again and again and again. So what do you see? That even though they did their shlichus, they do have a right to do it again, which would seem to knock out Rav Svara. Says the Gemara, Rav Yosef said, b'shtar matana. That shtar was talking about a shtar matana, where there's no risk, there's nothing bad that can come about because of the fact that the Edom signed on the shtar a second time. What's the issue with the Edom signing on the shtar a second time? Once they did their shlichus, they don't have a right to do a second shlichus. Let's do a new shlichus. Let the malva and the loiva, or the meicher and the lekeach, or the mak, let them tell the edim, I want to create a new shtar. The problem with just going and creating a new shtar is that the new shtar is going to be a shtar muktim. You want to create a new shtar and sign it today, that's something you can do. But how could you create a new shtar that's dated 2 years ago? That's something you don't have a right to do. That's the issue. The issue is that if you want the edim to do a new shlichus, you would have to date the shtar today. And in this case, you're not dating it today. You're dating it back to the original loan date. That's what we're trying to accomplish over here. But the Gemara says there are times where you can write a shtar muktam. How could you write a shtar muktam? But Yosef said b'shtar matana. A shtar matana could be muktam. The only reason you can't have a shtar muktam is because you might be turf from the lekuchas shaloik adin. A shtar matana, you anyways can't be turf from the lekuchas. If you give me a gift and then I find out later that the field that you gifted to me didn't really belong to you, I have no recourse. I can't go to lekuchas. A malva v'loiva, a meicher lekeach. There's ramifications with lekuchas. But in a matana, there's no ramifications with lekuchas. So you know what the halacha of Rabbi Yehuda Merav was? That Edom Koisven Afilo Asarish Shtaris Al Sada Achas? It means that if something happens to the shtar matana, you could write a new shtar matana. And you could even date it back to the original day. Isn't it going to be a shtar muktam? The answer is, yeah, who cares? A shtar matana could be a shtar muktam. The only reason you can't have a shtar muktam, again, is because you're going to be toyref from the lekuchas improperly. But over here, there's no lekuchas anyways. Because if I receive a gift and then it's taken away from me, there's no recourse. Rabba, I'm a b'shtar shein b'achrayas. That once you're going down that road, you could say we're talking really about a shtar mecher, but a shtar mecher that specifically states that there is no achrayas. Again, if there's no achrayas, there's no recourse. So memela, there's nothing wrong with the shtar being the shtar muktam. So enochinami, Rav agrees that Edom can sign on a shtar, and if something happens, you can write a new shtar, you can predate it, but that's only when there's going to be no ramifications of lekuchas, such as a shtar matana or a shtar mecher she'im b'achrayas. But in a regular shtar milva, misha para mixas chayve, where there are going to be ramifications from the chasim eshubadim, from the lekuchas, that's already a situation where you would not have no right to be machdimit. Thus, if you want to be machlif the shtar, because the loiva paid part of it, you'd have to do it in bezdin. You'd have to work with the koyach of hefker bezdin hefker. But outside of bezdin, you'd have no way to do it. The Gemara in Kufayin Amid Beis said that Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Huna, some say Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba told it to Rav Huna, that had Rav known of a specific braisa which clearly stated not like him, Rav would have been chayzer. And the Gemara says that they told Rav Huna, told Rav Nachman or Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba, Rav knew the braisa and he wasn't chayzer. This is not my braisa. What was that braisa? Titanyo, Harei Shayin, Eish Mayal of Zuz. If somebody was going after somebody because he owed him $1,000, part of him, Chamesh Meis, and he paid him back 500 Zuz. Eidim, Makaranes, Ashtar, Vekoisel, Ashtar, Achim, Asman, Rishon, Dev Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, what do we do? We have to have a new shtar now to reflect the new outstanding balance. So Rabbi Yehuda says what he said in the Mishnah. You rip up the shtar, you write a new shtar from this man Rishon. Rabbi Yosi says, shtar ze yehemunach mim koyma. No, you don't touch the shtar. You let the malva keep his shtar that says that the leva owes him $1,000. V'yichtevu shayver. What you do is you give the leva a shayver, and when the malva is going to pull out his shtar that says, you owe me $1,000, the leva is going to respond by pulling out a shayver that says, no, I don't, I only owe you $500. And Rabbi Yosi continued, umipnei shnei dvarim amru, kaisvin shayver. The two reasons I hold that this is the proper way of doing it, meaning don't be machlif the shtar, keep the shtar intact, just write a shayver. Achas, number one, kadesh yakov lepeira, because it's a good incentive for the leva to pay up the loan. If the leva knows that the malva has a document that says that the leva owes him $1,000, but really he only owes him $500. We mentioned this yesterday. So the leva is going to be very much incentivized to pay back the extra $500. The achas, the second reason is kadesh yigve mizman rishon. Because Rabbi Yossi tells Rabbi Yehuda, if you're going to rip up the shtar, write a new shtar, when's the new shtar going to be dated? It's not going to be dated the original date of when the loan took place, because how could you write a shtar today and date it yesterday? That's a shtar muktam. Elamai, it's going to be dated today. That's not good, because the malva wants the shtar to be dated yesterday, because his rights of nechasa meshubadim are based on the date mentioned in the shtar. And if that was the date of the original loan, why should he lose out on being able to collect from the nechasa meshubadim that took place between the date of the loan and the date mentioned in the shtar? So Rabbi Yossi says, in my scenario where we leave the original shtar intact, the malva still could collect from the nechasim mishubadim going back to the original date of the loan. But in your scenario, that you're going to be machlif, you're going to rip up the shtar, you're going to write a new shtar, aren't you writing the new shtar from today's date? But the Gemara says, no, Rabbi Yossi. V'harab Yehuda nami mizman rishon kamar. Right, if we're paying attention, we've been saying clearly the whole issue in the sugi was, the whole chiddush Rabbi Yehuda is that you are going to go back and you're going to date the new shtar based on when the original loan took place. As the Gemara, you're right. Hachi kamalei Rabbi Yosi l'Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi was telling Rabbi Yehuda as follows. Im izman rishon kamar, I'm not sure what you meant. When you said yachlif, when you said write a new shtar, did you mean date the shtar muktim, when the original loan took place, or do you mean date it today? So if you meant the original date, then I only have one reason I'm arguing with you. I think a shoiver is a good idea, because the shoiver incentivizes the loiver to pay the balance. Im izman sheni kamar, and if you meant that the new shtar is going to be dated based on the zman sheni, then peligalach betarati, then I have two reasons why I disagree with you. Number one, I think it's a good idea to have a shoiver because it incentivizes the loiver. And number two, if we keep the original shtar in place, the malva will be able to be goiva from the nechasim mishubadim going back to when the original loan took place. Whereas the way you're suggesting we do it, Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to be machlefit, the new shtar will be mizman sheni, he's going to lose out on those lakuchas. So again, Rabbi Yossi Taka wasn't sure if Rabbi Yehuda's new shtar zman would be the date that the new shtar was written, or they would do it as a shtar muktim, they would date it based on when the original loan took place. Either way, more the same thing. Tanu Rabban Shtar Shizmani Kasa B'Shabbos Oyba Sorry B'Tishrei. So Reuven has a shtar. He loaned Shimon $10,000. They pull out the shtar and they see that the date of the shtar was a Shabbos, or it was a Sorry B'Tishrei. It was Yom Kippur. Now it's clear we're talking about Chashuv Yidin. There's no way the loan actually took place on Shabbos. It actually took place on Yom Kippur. So either the shtar is a shtar muktim, or the shtar is a shtar mu'ocher. Meaning it either took place before Yom Kippur or after Yom Kippur. It was either before Shabbos or after Shabbos. The question is, did they predate the shtar or did they postdate the shtar? If they predated the shtar, it's a shtar muktim. A shtar muktim is always possible. If they postdated the shtar, it's a shtar mu'ocher. A shtar mu'ocher is kosher. Says the Gemara, shtar shizmane kosher b'Shabbos, oy v'asoru b'tishrei, shtar mu'ocher v'kosher. Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that we look at it as a shtar mu'ocher and it's going to be kosher. Rabbi Yossi says, no, we're going to look at it as a shtar muktim and it's going to be possible. Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda told Rabbi Yossi, v'ali maisa bolifanecha b'tipar. Rabbi Yossi was the rav. I heard that a story came to your court in Tzipayri where there was a shtar that was kasuv boizman b'Shabbos oy ba'asara b'tishrei v'hichsharta, and you said it was kosher. And presumably, if you said it was kosher, it's because you held that it's based on chazaka. Why should we assume that it was possible? Let's assume it was kosher. It's probably a shtar mu'ucher. Why a shtar muktim? Amalei, Rabbi Yossi told him, k'shehichsharti bozeh hichsharti. When I said it was kosher, this is again another example, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda don't seem to be talking to each other. Rabbi said, when I was machshered in a case like this. Yeah, this is the case we're discussing. Rabbi Yossi is saying that I was machshered in a case where this man was Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Says Rabbi Yehuda back to Rabbi Yossi, it's exactly my point. And I have a braisa where you say in the braisa, shtar shezmane kosher b'Shabbos, oy ba'asar b'tishrei, Rabbi Yossi Poisel, that it's going to be Poisel. Omer Rapodos. Rapodos said, let me clarify the confusion over here. Hakom Moedim, everybody agrees, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, Shom Huskaknu Loi Nosei Shol Shtar, V'nim Tzoi Nosei Mechuvenes B'Shabbos V'Asor B'Tishrei, Shtar Mechuv V'Kosher. A shtar that the date is either Shabbos or Asor B'Tishrei is definitely going to be a shtar Mechuv. It's definitely going to be Kosher. And that was the Maisa Shahoya Kachoya that happened with Rabbi Yossi and Tzipayri, where the shtar clearly was not written on the day written in the shtar. The question is, when was it written? Was it written before? Was it written after? So, if it was written before, that means these were bad guys when they wrote the shtar. They were violating Choshen Mishpah. If it was written mu'ucher, then it's okay. Chazaka says that it was probably written properly. And even though there's a braisa that seems to say it's a machloikis, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Poda said, no. Really, there was never such a machloikis. If we know for sure the shtar was not written on the date mentioned in the shtar, we all will assume that it was written mu'ucher and the shtar is going to be kosher. What was machloikis? A shtar mu'ucher ba'almo, a shtar that we know for sure is a shtar me'ucher, meaning there's no question, says the Gemara. Rabbi Yosi l'tamei, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei, Rabbi Yehuda holds ein kois fin shoyver. That halach is ein kois fin shoyver. V'loy nafik minei churba. Nothing bad is going to come from this. Rabbi Yosi l'tamei, Rabbi Yosi holds that there is a concern that something bad is going to come from this because he holds kois fin shoyver v'nafik minei churba. So the Gemara is saying something interesting. The Gemara is saying that it could be Rabbi Yosi holds that a shtar mo'ucher is really going to be possible. And the reason a shtar mo'ucher is going to be possible is because Rabbi Yosi l'tamei, Rabbi Yosi holds kois fin shayver. So again, where do you see that Rabbi Yosi holds kois fin shayver? In our Mishnah. Misha para mixas chayver. We have to now have a new shtar, or we need to do something to reflect the fact that some of the outstanding loan was paid back. So what do we do? Rabbi Yehuda said, Yachlef, you just write a new shtar. Rabbi Yosi says, Kais fin shayver is a good idea, you can write a shayver. The Gemara now is going to assume that Rabbi Yehuda, perhaps, fundamentally had an issue with a shayver. He had an issue with a shayver in the case of Mishnah Parah Mixas Chayver, which is the case of our Mishnah. And perhaps Rabbi Yehuda had a problem with shayver even in other scenarios as well. Where else would it have been a geya, Kais fin shayver or in Kais fin shayver? And really, you find this machlokes in Chas. Kois fin shayver ain't kois fin shayver. The primary example of where the Tanaim argue kois fin shayver is a case not where somebody paid mixas chayver. It's a case where somebody paid the entire chayv. So Reuven loaned Shimon $10,000. Shimon pays the $10,000. What is Shimon going to tell Reuven? I want the shtar back. I don't want you to be able to pull the shtar out a second time and collect payment from me. So Reuven tells Shimon, I lost the shtar. I'm sorry. So Shimon says, listen, you lost the shtar. I'm also sorry. I'm not paying you because I'm not going to subject myself to the risk that either you're lying to me or maybe you're telling the truth and later you're going to find the shtar and you're going to decide that you want to collect money from me again. So Reuven says, you know what? I'll tell you, just make payment. I'll give you a shayver. I'll give you a receipt. You have nothing to worry about. Now, if Shimon agrees to that deal, he's exposing himself to risk. Because what happens if later Shimon loses the receipt, he loses the shayver, and Reuven was lying, or Reuven finds the shtar, he'll be able to be goyed for him a second time. So it's machlokes in the Gemara. Kois fin shayver ain't kois fin shayver. The Ma'amar that says kois fin shayver holds that the loifa, Shimon, has to pay Reuven. And even though Reuven doesn't have the shtar, too bad. Kois fin shayver, take the shayver and watch it, and make sure you don't lose it. And if you lose it, what am I supposed to tell you? The mandam that holds in kois fin shayver holds, no, we don't subject the loiva to such cruel and unusual punishment. It's not fair. Why should I have to subject myself to that? Lose the shayver, and that either the malva has the shayver and he can pay it back, or the malva, says the Gemara, could be this machloikis, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, where someone was peirei a mixas chayver. Is the eitzah yachlef, or is the eitzah kois fin shayver? Could be totally in that more general machloikis. In Chas, any single time, the loiva wants to make payment to the malva, but the malva doesn't have the shtar. Could we force the loiva to make payment, take the shayver, or could we not force it? Rabbi Yehuda that said in our Mishnah Yachlev, the eitzah by a para mixas chayver is not to write a shayver. Could Rabbi Yehuda holds throughout Chas taloch is ain't kois fin shayver. Whereas Rabbi Yosi, who said yichtev shayver, he's going to be the opinion throughout Chas taloch is going to be kois fin shayver. So what does that have to do with the shayla of a shtar mo'ocher? So the Gemara is suggesting that it could be every single shtar mo'ocher, really you're exposing yourself to risk. What's the risk? Because what happens if Reuven loaned Shimon $10,000 and the loan took place on January 1st? So January 1st, there was a loan, $10,000. But they decided to be ma'acher the shtar, and they wrote the shtar July 1st. Now, ordinarily, that shtar would be kosher. Why would it be kosher? Because the only damage that could take place by the shtar being misdated is the lekuchos. The people that bought property from the loiva, who are on the hook to have to perhaps give that property to the malva, if the malva comes to collect and the loiva himself doesn't have any bnei chari, he doesn't have anything to give. So those mishubadim are on the hook. So therefore, the date of when the loan took place matters, because it's only the people that bought after the loan a date that are going to run into trouble. So a shtar mukhtim is always considered to be an issue. We don't have to go through this now. A shtar mukhtim is never considered to be an issue. Right? That's the conventional wisdom. But here says the Gemara have another issue. You know what the issue is? What happens if the loiva pays the loan sometime between January 1st and July 1st? He pays on April 1st. April 1st, he makes payment. The loiva tells the malva, okay, I'm paying you the $10,000. Reuven, I want my shtar. Reuven says, I don't have the shtar. According to the man that holds Kaisvin Shaver, so what's going to happen? The loiva will still have to pay. The malva is going to give the loiva a receipt. When's this receipt going to be dated? April 1st. That says that he made it. $10,000. Then Reuven, the malva, is going to find, quote unquote, the shtar, and he's going to go to the loiva and he's going to say, I want $10,000. I loaned it to you. He's going to, I have a receipt. He's going to pull out the receipt. The receipt says he made payment on April 1st. The shtar was mu'ukhar, so that even though really the loan was on January 1st, what's the shtar going to say? That the loan took place on July 1st. So how's that receipt going to help you? If I have a shtar that says that I loaned you $10,000 on July 1st, and you pull out a receipt that says you already paid April 1st, 3 months earlier, so what's any bezdin going to think? The receipt is obviously related to some previous loan that took place, but this $10,000 is outstanding. So there's a svara now to say, there's a new svara to say that a shtar mu'ukhar should be possible. What's the svara that a shtar mu'ukhar should be possible? Kais fin shayver. Because if kais fin shayver, this can happen. If ain't kais fin shayver, this can never happen. Why could this never happen if ain't kais fin shayver? Because what's the chash? The chash is that after the loiva paid, 3 months later, the malva is going to pull the shtar out and try to collect again. If ain kais fin shayver, the minute the loiva paid, he gets the shtar back. If he gets the shtar back, this can never play itself out. How's it playing itself out? The loiva paid, but the malva still has the shtar. Or the malva may find the shtar. It's only shayach if you can force the loiva to pay without the malva being forced to relinquish the shtar. So if there's such a scenario, that's true in the world of kais fin shayver. You force the loiva to pay and take a shayver in lieu of getting the shtar back. But if you hold that in kais fin shayver, so this can never happen. So says the Gemara, maybe this machloik is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi in this ambiguous braisa, which discusses the shtar mu'ukhar, kosher apostle. Ulai, maybe that is toloi in the machloikis Rabbi Yosef Yehuda in our Mishnah. At first glance, Mahakesha, what does one have to do with the other? Says the Gemara, betuv tam, because maybe the machloikis Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah of Misha Parah Mixas Chayva, Yachlif, or Yichtev Shayver is toloi in the more shas machloikis, whether Kais fin Shayver ain't Kais fin Shayver in the event that the malva lost the shtar. So that Rabbi Yehuda who holds Yachlev holds Ein Kais fin Shayver. Rabbi Yossi that holds Yichtev Shayver obviously holds Kais fin Shayver. And if that's the case, it play itself out. And nafka mina, whether a shtar mu'ukhar should be kosher or a shtar mu'ukhar should be possible. The Gemara is doichet. Amar Rav Huna b'rei Rabbi Yeshua, afilu l'man d'ama Kais fin Shayver, hani milia palga. I don't know if it's mukhach, because it could be even Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah who holds Kais fin Shayver, that was talking about a Misha Parah Mixas Chayver. Misha Parah Mixas Chayver, Rabbi Yossi explained why the halach is kais fin shayver to incentivize the loiva. The svar is to say kais fin shayver, aval akule loy. But once I'm making full payment, there's no reason in the world that the halacha should be that ain kais fin shayver. Says that kais fin shayver, and then the halacha is going to be ain kais fin shayver. You want the loiva to make full payment at that point, you have to. But the Gemara says v'lohi afilu akule kasvinon. Even though you could say that, but it's not true. Really, kais fin shayver, even akule. Ki other rabbis by Yosef have a masik bezuz berababo. Another business transaction involving the great Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef was trying to collect money for Rabbi Abba. Also, the comment Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi came to Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi. Amalei told him, Havli Zuzi, give me my money. Amalei Havli Shtayroi, I will, but you give me my shtar. Vishkel Zuzach. Amalei, so Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef tells Rabbi Abba, Shtar Chirchasli, I lost the shtar. Echtav L'chotavra, if you want, I'll give you a shayver. Amalei, so he told him like this, Ha Rabbi Shmuel Dami Travayo, Ein Kais Fin Shayver. Rabbi and Shmuel both said, Ein Kais Fin Shayver. So that I'm not taking a shayver. I don't have to pay you in exchange of a shayver. Ein kais fin shayver. Oh, my. So Rabbi Yisrael Bar Yosef said, Man yavlo me afre de Rav and Shmuel. Rabbina Ba'ayin, I wish I would have some of the offer of Rav and Shmuel. I would put it on my eyes right now. Meaning he was speaking very respectfully about Rav and Shmuel. but it was as an introduction to what he was about to say. And that is that even though Rav and Shmuel said it, but Mechilas Kvoidam, we don't paskin like Rav and Shmuel. Because HaRab Yechanan, V'Reish Lakish, Amri Travayu, Koisvin Shoiver. They hold Koisvin Shoiver. Chinti Yasser Rav and Amr Rabbi Law, Koisvin Shoiver. Halacha is Koisvin Shoiver. So says the Gemara, you see, it's not so posh, it ain't Koisvin Shoiver Akula. Again, it's a big shayla and shas. Koisvin Shoiver or ain't Koisvin Shoiver. In our Mishnah, we got into it in the case of Misha Parah Miktsas Choyvay, but as you see in the Gemara, it doesn't only affect a Parah Miktsas Choyvay, but rather it affects someone that paid down the entire loan as well. Says the Gemara, Umistabra the Koisvin Shoiver. It makes sense that the halacha should be Koisvin Shoiver. Why? The isol could die to chen koisvin shayver. Because if the halacha is chen koisvin shayver, avat shtori shozeh yoichel alav echadi. What are the ramifications of chen koisvin shayver? Right, just conceptualize. It's not so difficult. What's the ramifications of chen koisvin shayver? The ramifications are that if Reuven loans Shimon money, and now when Reuven comes to collect the chayv, Shimon agrees that there's an outstanding chayv there. Edom that say there's an outstanding chayv, but Reuven doesn't have the shtar anymore. The malva lost the shtar. He will not be able to collect the chayv. If the malva doesn't have the shtar, he'll have no way of collecting the chayv. Why? Because in koisvin shayva, so that the loiva can't be forced to take a receipt to say he had payment. So the only way he'll make payment is if he gets the shtar back. If the malva lost the shtar, he's never going to pay. That means the malva has no choice but to constantly watch his shtar chayv. If somebody lends somebody money and then he loses his shtar, if you hold ein koisvin shayver, you have no way in the world of ever getting paid. So it says the Gemara, it makes sense then that the halacha should be koisvin shayver. Because the isol kedaitach in koisvin shayver, avat shtori shalzeh, yoichel alav echadi. Does it make sense that the loiva should be able to somehow get lucky? The malva loses the shtar and will never have to make payment. But the Gemara says, Maskefla Abaya, Abaya flipped it. Fellow my Koisvin Shaver, you're going to tell me Koisvin Shaver? Ovat Shaivarish as a Yoichel Halav Chadi? Someone's going to have to take risk. So what? How does it play out of Koisvin Shaver? If Koisvin Shaver, that means the loiva comes to pay, he tells the malva, I want the shtar back. Malva says, I lost the shtar. We don't know if he's telling the truth or not. We're going to force him to make payment. Koisvin Shaver, he's going to take a Shaver in return. And what happens if he loses the Shaver one day? So if he loses the Shaver one day, now he's going to be in trouble. Who's going to be the one that's laughing? V'chadi, all the way to the bank. The Malva is going to be the one that's laughing because he's going to be able to collect the second time. So either way you go, someone here is exposing himself to major risk. Either the Malva, he must hold on to the Shtar Chayv in order for him to ever collect payment, or the Loiva. If he's forced to make payment without getting the shtar back and gets a shoiver, he's going to be forced to watch the shoiver. Otherwise, he's exposing himself to the risk that the malva is going to come collect from him a second time. So does it make more sense to expose the malva to this risk or to expose the loiva to this risk? I'm going to lay Rava in. It makes a lot more sense to expose the loiva to this. Why? Because eved loiva leish malva. Because the reality is that the loiva is an eved to the malva, so it makes more sense to subject the loiva to this than it does to subject the malva to this. Let's just exhale for a moment and go back to the beginning of the sugya on a much lighter note, learning some intense sugya. So Bava Basra is not going away lightly. It's leaving with a bang. So just to go back to the beginning of the sugya and speak out something light. So we have a Misha Para Mixas Chayva. And in the Mishnah was a Machloikis. It's a Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda Oime Yachlif. Rabbi Yossi Oime Yichtoiv. Shoyva Rach. Omer Rav Huna Marav. So Rav said in the Gemara, Ein Halacha Leik Rabbi Yehuda Veleik Rabbi Yossi. The Halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. Elo Bezdin Mekaren Ashtar Vekois Veloi Shtar Racha Mizman Rishon. Saw that Rav is very similar to Rabbi Yehuda. He's saying Yachlif, but whereas Yachlif suggests that the Malva, the Loiv, and the Edom, they could all do this on their own. You could be Machlif the Shtar. You could even write this Man Rishon, but you have to do it in Bezdin. Why is Bezdin different? Because Bishlam Beidino Alimi Lafku Yemamoida. You have Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. But outside of Bezdin, you don't have Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. So essentially, Rav came and Rav said, Halacha is not like you, Rabbi Yehuda. It's not like you, Rabbi Yossi. The Halacha is a third Shita. Says the Rashbam, how did Rav and Amoira have a right to be Machriya Bein HaTanoim? How did he have a right to say that Halacha is not like any of the Tanoim mentioned in the Mishnah and the Braisa, but rather be Mechadesh and Upsha? Says the Rashbam, one line, V'Rav Tanahu Upalik. Rav, although it was an Amoira, but it was also treated as a Tana. So Rav Tana Upalik, and being that Rav is a Tana, he has a right to be Machriya, he has a right to Paskin, not like Rav Yehuda and not like Rav Yosi. Now, the truth is, this idea of Rav Tanu Upalig is something that we've talked about previously in the daf, but ein beis medrash b'loy chiddush. So, just to set it up a little bit, Rav was an Amoira. How do you know Rav was an Amoira? Because you find Amoiram argue with Rav throughout Chas. Yet, the Gemara says, Rav Tana Upalik. Rav was a Tana, and Rav had a right to argue with Tanan. So was Rav an Amoira, or was Rav a Tana? And again, it matters if Rav's an Amoira, or Rav is a Tana. Because ordinarily, Amoiram can argue with Tanan. There are many discussions in Chas that are resolved, because the Gemara will bring a Braisa, the Gemara will bring a Mishnah, and it's checkmate, because an Amoira never has a right to argue with a Tana. And yet you have Rav, who seems to be wearing two hats. On the one hand, Rav is an Amoira. Amoiram are arguing with Rav. Amoiram can argue with a Tana. Yet, you find that Rav, like in our sugya, Rav Tanu Polik. Rav is really a Tana. And just to bring the point out, who is Rav's compadre in Shas? Who's Rav's primary Baal Plukta? Shmuel. Whenever there's machlek, is Rav and Shmuel in Shas? So Be'isuri, if it's a question of Yerideya, Eben Ezer, Isur the Heter, we pass him like Rav. If it's a question of Dinei Mominis, Choshen Nishpat, Allah was always like Shmuel. So not only could Shmuel and Amoira argue with Rav, but whenever there's Machlekes, Rav and Shmuel, if it's Choshen Nishpat, Allah even follows Shmuel. We don't even pass him like Rav. Rav's other big Baal Plukta is Rav Yechanan. Rav Yechanan was the God of Adar in Eretz Yisrael. Rav and Shmuel were the Gedali Adar, same Tekufa. In Bavel, wherever Rabbi Yochanan and Rav argue, it's a Gemara Masech Des Beya, Daf Dalet Amid Beis, Tapani Amid, you can look it up. The halacha is always like Rabbi Yochanan. By the way, whenever Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel argue, it's a Gemara, Erevin Mem Zayin Amid Beis, on the bottom of the Amid, you can look it up. The halacha always follows Rabbi Yochanan. So here you have Rav, who's two big Bali plucked in Shas, Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Number one, Amoiram, and they can argue with Rav. Number two, you find that when Shmuel argues with Rav, the halacha very often will follow Shmuel. And when Rabbi Yochanan argues with Rav, the halacha is always going to follow Rabbi Yochanan. Yet Rav is a Tana somehow, and Upolik, he's allowed to argue with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. So Rav can take on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, yet when Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, who cannot take on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, because they're not my Rav, and they argue with Rav, the halacha may even follow them. So it seems to be a little confusing, a very obvious mevucha. How exactly do you make sense of this? And the truth is that Tosfos in Masechtas Ksubos, Daf Ches Amud Aleph, discusses Rabbi Yochanan. Was Rabbi Yochanan an Amoira, or was Rabbi Yochanan a Tana? And Tosfos over there has a raya from a Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan was really an Amoira. It's interesting. Before that Gemara, Tosfos spanned the entire Shas, and he wasn't sure if Rabbi Yochanan was a Tana or an Amoira. But Tosfos have one raya. Ksubis, Daf Ches Amud Aleph, tucked away right before the Sugya Pesach Pesuach, right before Ksubis Daf Tes. Tosfos says, I have a raya from that Gemara there that Rabbi Yochanan was not a Tana. Freak Tosfos, if Rabbi Yochanan wasn't a Tana, how could Rabbi Yochanan argue with Rav? Rav's Tana Upolik. As I freak Tosfos, Tosfos Kasha. So Tosfos says, Rabbi Yochanan probably was of the opinion that Rav was an Amoira. Fascinating. So it's true that Rav is Tana Upalik. Rabbi Yochanan didn't think so. So if Rabbi Yochanan didn't think so, Rabbi Yochanan, I could argue with Rav. Now the emes is Rav Tana Upalik. But Rabbi Yochanan didn't feel that way. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan had a right to, or in his mind, I'll call upon him, to argue with Rav. Here's the problem. Ready for the problem? And the problem that I'm about to present was Elchanan Wasserman, Hashem Yimkom Domi's problem, and he writes in Kovach Shum that he asked his kasha to Rav Chaim Briska. His kasha was that whenever the halacha, whenever Rav and Rabbi Yechanan argue, we just said, it's Beyat Avdalan Amid Beis, Tampari Amid, the halacha follows Rabbi Yechanan. That Tosfos said in Ksubas Tavches that the only platzus, word of the day, that Rabbi Yochanan had to argue with Rav is because he held that Rav was an Amoira. But if Rav was a Tana, Rabbi Yochanan would never have had the chutzpah to even argue with Rav. How could Rabbi Yochanan argue with Rav? Rabbi Yochanan can't argue with a Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan can't argue with a Braisa. If Rav is a Tana, then Rabbi Yochanan would be able to argue with Rav. Elamai, Rabbi Yochanan felt that Rav was really an Amoira. Now, if Rav is really an Amoira, that gives Rabbi Yochanan the right to argue with Rav. But what if Rav's a Tana? That means Rabbi Yochanan can argue with Rav. Now, if the Gemara says in Beya, Daf Talad Amid Beis, then whenever there's Machlokes is Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, we follow Rabbi Yochanan. What does that mean? That means we paskin halacha l'maisa that Rav was an Amoira. Because if Rav was a Tana, not only could halacha not be like Rabbi Yochanan couldn't have even argued with Rav. So Elamai, the Gemara is paskining The Gemara is paskening that Rav is an Amayra. That's why Rabbi Yechanan could argue with Rav, and that's why the halacha can even be like Rabbi Yechanan. But it's all based on a fact that Rav was an Amayra. What's the problem? Our Gemara, we have over here, Misha Parah Miksas Chayv, Rabbi Yudah said, Yachlev Yeseh Yichle Shayv Arach. And Rav comes in, and Rav said, Ein halacha loik Rabbi Yudah v'loik Rabbi Yeseh, Elo Bezah Mekaran Hashtar V'koyzeh V'shtar Arachim Zman Rish. And what's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch? So there's a little gimel right next to Rav. You know what that means? We paskin like Rav. What does it mean we paskin like Rav? We paskin that Rav could argue with a Mishnah. He could argue with Rabbi Yehuda. He could argue with Rabbi Yeseh. In other words, Rav Tanu Upolik. Frank. Rabbi Chana, Kasha Hilchasa Hilchasa. Is Rav a Tana or is Rav an Amayra? And it plays itself out la halacha. From Beyed Aftal number days, it's Mashma that Rav was an Amayra. Where's it Mashma that way? Because whenever Rav and Rabbi Yechanan argue that halachas and Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yechanan couldn't have argued with Rav. Like Tosfos says in Ksuvas Daf Chesam and Aleph, if Rav was a Tana. Elamai, what the Gemara's paskening is that Rav is really in Amayra. Yet in our Gemara right here, we've paskin like Rav, not like Rabbi Yossi, not like Reb Yehuda, which means Rav Tanahu Polik, like the Rashbam speaks out, B'lashayne Hazav, right here in our Gemara, which means Rav Zatana. So which one is it? Is Rav an Amayra or is Rav Zatana? And he says, Sha'altim, Moiri v'Rebi, Agoyin, Reb Chaim, Halevi, and he brings a teretz from Reb Chaim. It's a little bit of a difficult teretz, so I'm not going to speak out his teretz. A little deflating. But there are two other interesting things that Rabbi Chanan does say in that piece in Kovet Shiurim that I think are worth mentioning. Number one, he quotes a famous letter from Rav Shri Rogoyin. So all history buffs should be very familiar with Rav Shri Rogoyin's letter, because a lot of Jewish history that we have is based on a letter that was written by one of the Gaonim, Rav Shri Rogoyin. So if you go through some of the contemporary history books and you read the footnotes, a lot of it is coming from this letter of Rav Shri Rogoyin. So one of the things Rav Shri Rogoyin writes over there is that Rav, you find in the Gemara, was Tanu Upolik. Says Rav Shri Rogoyin, Adava Nifla. He says it wasn't only Rav, but he says all the Talmidim of Rebbe, all the Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the author of the Mishnah, they were all considered Amayroin, but at the same time, Tanu Upolik. They had a right to argue with Tana. And he brings a few examples. Rav Chanina, Rav Yanai, and Rav. Dahavi Talmida de Rebbe, Ubekame Duchti Amrinon, Rav Tano Upolig, Vamanami Rabbanan Achrini, Dahavi Amayrot. Al Kapana Rav Shira Goyin says it wasn't exclusively Rav, but it was all the Talmidim of Rebbe. They all had this ability to be considered a Tanahu Upalik. The one obvious hara is Rabbi Yechanan was also a Talmud of Rabbi. In fact, to say that there is, if you look under Rabbi Yechanan, Elu Rabbeisav Shal Rabbi Yechanan, he has a whole list. These were the Rabbein Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Psachim Daf Gimel Amid Beis, Chulim Perik Gimel, Menachas Peches Amid Beis, Zvachim Tzadik Tes Amid Beis, Soit Lamed Vav Amid Beis. So he has a whole bunch of Gemaras, a whole list of Gemaras that Rabbi Yechanan was a Talmud of Rebbe. Now Rav Shri Rogoyin said that all the Talmudim of Rebbe were Tanu Upolik. And Tosfos said, this is the Tosfos we're just talking about, Ksubas Chesam and Aleph, Rabbi Yechanan is not a Tanu Upolik. So maybe this Tosfos is not like this Rav Shri Rogoyin. But either way, Rav Shri Rogoyin said that all the Talmudim of Rebbe were considered Tanu Upolik. The second interesting thing that Rabbi Chanan brings is he brings a Ramban. And this Ramban is Masechtas Bava Basra, not on this Gemara right here, but 40 blad earlier. It's on Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph. And over there, the Ramban says a Dava Nifla. He says, this that you find throughout Shas, that an Amoyer can argue with a Tana, that's only if the Tana is mentioned in a Mishnah or the Tana is mentioned in a Braisa. But let's say there's a Memra. There's a quote. There's something b'shem Matana that's mentioned in Shas. It's not mefurish in a Mishnah or a Braisa. Something like that, an Amoyra has a right to argue with. Very interesting. So it's true that an Amoyra can't argue with a Tana. Rav Tanu Upolik, he's an exception to the rule. But ordinarily, an Amoyra can't argue with a Tana. But says the Ramban, and Rabbi Chanan brings that he found it also in the Aliyah, the Rabbeinu Yoino. They both say that it's only if this statement of the Tana is mentioned in a Mishnah and a Braisa. But if it's not in a Mishnah and a Braisa, it's just a memra in the name of a certain Tana. Over there, the halacha is going to be that Amoyra can even argue with a Tana. And Rabbi Chanan, and this is classic, says, I have a kasha on this Ramban. Listen to this kasha. He says, one of the most famous disputes in the entire Shas, one of the most famous machloikis in a Shas, is resolved by saying that how could these two Amiram argue? It's mefurish in a Tana. And that statement of the Tana is not mentioned in a Mishnah or Braisa. It's a memra. Yishaloi midas. Machlekes Abaye v'Rava, right? One of the most famous machlekes in the Shas. So Rava says Haviyish, Abaye says Loi Haviyish. It's one of the Yalkagans. We pass like Abayish, Lemidas, Loi Haviyish. And after the first two blah, these are the first two blah Gemara that a lot of children learn. The Gemara at the very end resolves the dispute by saying, Toshma, the Om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok. Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok, Minayin, Labeda Shashatvanar, Vachulu Vachulu. And the Gemara says, Oh, Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok, he was a Tana, he held Yish, Loi Midas, Loi Abi Yish, Tufta, the Rava, Tufta. Rav is knocked out. The Hilchas Agavasi that by the Alpigam. That's how the Gemara ends. Says Rabbi Chanan, Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok. It doesn't sound like he had a Mishnah. It doesn't sound like he had a Braisa. It was Mishum Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok. He heard it. There was a Shmua. He heard it from his Rebbe. Who heard it from his Rebbe? There was some Shmua that was passed down that Shmuel ben Yitzadok held that Yish Loi Midas Loi Havi Yish. It's not a Mishnah. It's not a Braisa. So, Freit Rabbi Chanan, what's Tufta Dab Rava Tufta? How are we knocking out Shitas Rava based on Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok said? It's based on the assumption that an Amora Rava can't argue with a Tana, Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok. But if the Ramban's Gerech, the only time an Amora can argue with a Tana is if it's in a Mishnah or it's a Braisa. This is not a Mishnah, it's not a Braisa. It's Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzadok. And still you see, the Gemara resolved the famous machloikis of Yeshaloi Midas based on something a Tana said, despite the fact he didn't say it in a Mishnah, despite the fact that he didn't say it in a Braisa. Says Rabbi Chanan, it's a Ha'or on the Ramban. It would be mashma from here that a Moira can never argue with a Tana, regardless of whether it's mentioned in Mishnah Brayso. Either way, Rabbi Chanan has an Arichos here in Kovitz Yurim. It's Ois Tov Reish Lama Gimel, 633, if you want to look it up. But he goes through this idea. Rav, Tanu, Polig, Amiram, arguing with Tanam. You can take a look at the teretz that he brings to Rabbi Chaim inside if you want to see it. But there's one Marumokim that I was very surprised Rabbi Chanan doesn't bring. And that is a Kesef Mishnah in the beginning of the second Perek in Hilchas Manrim. The Rambam over there says as follows. Bezdin HaGodol Shedorshu Ba'achas Min HaMidois Gefit Mashenire Be'eneim Shadin Kach V'donudin. Bezdin HaGodol said a halacha. They darshan yud gimel midos and they came up with a halacha. Va'om adachrei in bezden achar, and then a bezden came later. V'nir leitam achar listeroi said in, and they think that the first bezden got it wrong. And they want to contradict what the first Bezdin said. They have a right to do that. Here's the Rambam. So Rambam says, there was a Bezdin HaGadol, 19th century, some really choshev Bezdin, and they darshan echad miyud gimel midah shatar in the dreshes behem, and they came up with a psak halacha. And then in the 20th century, 100 years later, another Bezdin comes, and that Bezdin, they revisit this shayla, and they think the first Bezdin maybe made a mistake. And they want to be soyser asadin. Rambam says they could do that. It's not an issue. Harezes soyser v'don kefim ashir be'enav. Shenema ela shoyfet ashir be'yabim ahim. Now we're all familiar with the Gemara. Ein bezden yochel levatel divrei bezden chaveri elam ken godom imenu b'chachum imenu. So the Rambam addresses that. The Rambam says that's referring more to gzeirois and takonois. The Rambam has three classes of a second bezden coming and trying to uproot something that a previous bezden did. But if what the bezden had originally done was simply say a halacha based on Yud Gimel Midos Shatayr Nedreshes Behem, a Bezdin later, a future dar, even if they're not smarter than them, they're not God of the Chachma, the Minyan, it doesn't matter, they have a right to be Soyser Kefi Mashe Yirbein. Freak the Kesef Mishnah, the Im Toimar. If that's the case, Im Kein Amayloi Pligi Amayroi Matanoi. Why can't an Amayro argue with a Tana? The Bechol Duchta Makshinon La Amayro Mi Masnisen Oimi Braisa. You always find throughout Shas so many disputes are resolved between the Amiram by finding a Braisa or by finding a Mishnah. So freaked the Kesef Mishnah. If the Rambam said that a Bezdin Achar, a later Bezdin, can undo something a previous Bezdin did, even if they're not greater than them, because it says Allah Shoifet Ashiyeh Bayomim Mahem Ein Ato Chayiv Lolechas Elacha Bezdin Shabadarcha. So why is it that an Amora can argue with a Tana? Says the Kesef Mishnah VeEfshaloymar Shemiyoyim Chasimas HaMishnah. As soon as the Mishnah was completed, Kimu Vikiblu, the Amiram took it upon themselves, Shedoyre So Achroinim Lo Yachloiku Al Rishayim, that the Deiris Achreinim won't argue with the Deiris Arishayim. It's true. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with an Amor arguing with a Tana. Just like a Bezin in the 20th century can argue with something that a Bezin in the 19th century said. There's nothing fundamentally wrong. The only reason you find in Shas that an Amora can argue with a Tana is because the Amoraim took it upon themselves that they wouldn't argue with Tanon. It was a Kabbalah that they made. But had they not made that Kabbalah, there'd be no issue to go argue with them. And says the Kesem Mishnah, it seems that this Kabbalah repeated itself. Gam b'chsimas ha-Talmud. Shemiyoyim shenechtam lo yinitein rishus l'shum adam lachlik olam. So says the Kesem Mishnah, we always think an Amora can't argue with a Tana. You read the Sadeiros, you know, whatever we attribute it to. But the truth is, says the Kesem Mishnah, it's not so poshut. Because the Rambam already said that a later Bezin can argue with a previous Bezin, even if they're not as great as them in learning. What's it based on? It's based on the fact that Ela Shoyfet Hashiyah b'yom l'heh. Why is it that an American argue with a Tana? It's a Kabbalah that they made. So going back to this mevucha, this enigma with Rav, is Rav an Amora? Is he a Tana? Amiram could argue with Rav, but then again, Rav can argue with a Tana, whereas the Amiram can't argue with a Tana. If this was all based on Kabbalah, maybe Rav never took it upon himself that he's not going to argue with the Tana. Maybe when the Amiram took it upon themselves that they wouldn't argue with Tanaim, they said, with the exception of Rav, maybe Rav's a Tana, but we're going to argue with you, Rav. But being that it's not so much a din, it's not am I a Amora or a Tana. That's not so black and white. It's more, there was some Kabbalah that was made that Amiram won't argue with Tana. Maybe that is the Mafteach. Maybe that's the Schlissel over here to try to understand the enigma, which is Rav Tana Upal. For just one final Ha'ara, and to bring it a little bit in Yonah Diyomis. Yesterday was Shavas V'Tavmas. We're beginning now the 3 weeks. So the Rav, Rabbi Shua Abba, said over an interesting Ha'ara that he heard from the Reshiva of David Shostel. His Ha'ara was that you find during the 3 weeks that Mi'ikra Din, the Gemara says, meaning if you're doing the sugis and the Masechtas Tainus, Medina de Gemara, it was usur for a person to eat meat or drink wine only on Erev Tisha B'Av during the Suda HaMafsechtas. So Medina de Gemara, you didn't have to make a siyum during the 9 days if you wanted to have a steak dinner. It wasn't necessary. If you wanted it by the Suda HaMafsechtas, and probably Rav wouldn't let you make a siyum there. But that was the only time it was an issue. It was Erev Tisha B'Av by the Suda HaMafsechtas that it was usur for a person to eat meat and to drink wine. Additionally, Medina de Gemara, the isur to shave and to shower, wash your clothing, was only usur Shvur Shechal B'Av Tisha B'Av. But if it wasn't Shvur Shechal B'Av Tisha B'Av, at that point, there would have been no isur. Stating that, as the generations followed, there were many takonas that were added to the Ikar Hadin. Number one, you're not allowed to eat meat and drink wine even during the Shavuot Shechal by Tisha B'Av. The Minhag Ashkenazim is from Rosh Chodesh up. Not just that, there are certain things that you can't even do from Shavuot B'Tammuz. You're not supposed to listen to music, you're not supposed to take a haircut, right? So the things that you're not supposed to are in hell. So there's certain things that you're not supposed to do already from Shavuot B'Tammuz. So you find that as the Doiris passed, the halachas actually became more and more stringent. And the order that Rabbi Shua Abba asked was that if you think about it, it's counterintuitive. Because you would think that the closer Klal Yisrael was to the Churban, the more it would make sense to mourn. And here's just the opposite. The further we are removed, the more difficult it is for us to relate to it, the more we seem to be imposing what at first glance would almost be superficial types of avelos. It's hepech asvar. And by the way, in halacha you find that it usually works the opposite. Because there's something called an avelos yeshana. What's avelos yeshana? If somebody le'aleinu finds out 5 years later that one of his parents died. So a person, he was in Medina Sayam, back in the day, he didn't have communication like he had today, and someone, one of his parents, le'aleinu, died. He finds out 5 years later. See, he's not knowing regular avelos. It's what's called an avelos yeshana, avelos chadasha. So we know avelos chadasha. You have shiva, you have shloshim, you have yud beis chodesh, you follow the regular course of avelos. But there is an idea of avelos yeshana, perik ve'elu megalchen, and the halachas usually are more cool with it because you're more removed from it. So the thing that you're removed from, you're not obligated to mourn so much. And over here, when it comes to churban beis hamikdash, it would seem to be just the opposite. That the further removed we got, the more the chachamim felt that it was necessary to start imposing things. So he said, a pshat and behektim based on a medrash echa. So the medrash is beis dalit in echa rabba. Gemara says as follows, Rabbi Yochanan havedarish shitin apin bebila Hashem alei chama. There's a pasuk in echa that says, Bila Hashem v'loy chama. And Rabbi Yochanan would sit and he would darshan, say 60 stories of where this pasuk, this horrible klala of Bila Hashem Eloi Chamo manifested itself, played itself out. Rebbe Habidarish Esrim Barba Apin. Rebbe would sit, and when he would darshan Bila Hashem Eloi Chamo, he wouldn't say 60. He would only say 24. It says the Gavaloi to Rabbi Yochanan Yosra, Rebbe. It's not because Rabbi Yochanan was somehow greater than Rebbe. He had 60 pshatim, 60 manifestations of Bila Hashem Eloi Chamo, and Rebbe only had 22. Elo Rebbe Aydesha Yosomach L'Churban Abayis. Rebbe was one generation closer to the Churban. Hayenisker v'hayodayresh ubeicha umesnachin. So because Rebbe was one generation closer, just said Rebbe was Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe. He was one generation closer to the Churban that was Rabbi Yochanan. It's for that reason that Rebbe, when he would darshan, he would say only 24 pshatim, whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say 60. So Rabbi Shua Abba said over from his father, Shivan Edison, that he said, what's the pshat? He said, the pshat is because Rebbe, being that he was closer to Churban Beis HaMikdash, when he was darshaning Bila Hashem Eloi Chamo, and he was giving his pulpit, his speeches from the pulpit to his kehilah, he didn't have to say so much in Bila Hashem Eloi Chamo to get the Olam to a point where they would feel that they can properly mourn Churban Beis HaMikdash. Because it was fresh. They were one generation closer to the Churban. They knew people who knew people that were survivors. It was something that they were very much able to relate to. But Rabbi Yochanan, who was a dar shpeter, he was a dar later, being that it was a little bit further removed from the Churban, in order for him to get his kehilah, his congregation, to the right point, where they could properly feel, where they could properly experience the avelos of Churban Beis HaMikdash, 22 apin wasn't enough. He had to say more. He had to say shitin apin b'bila Hashem Eloi Chamo. And like the Medrash says, it's not because Rabbi Yochanan was greater than Rebbe. The point is, Rebbe Ayidei Shahoyah Samech L'Churban Abayis, he was one generation closer. And one generation closer meant that people could relate to it a little bit more. And being that they were able to relate to it a little bit more, they didn't need as much in order to get them to the point where they'd be able to properly mourn. Rabbi Yochanan, who was a generation removed, he needed a little bit more. It's interesting, by the way, Rabbi Yochanan is somewhat tied into Churban Beis HaMikdash. You know, the Gemara says in Masechtas Brachos Daf Hei Amud Beis, it's a well-known Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Lazar was sick, and Rabbi Yochanan went to be mevaker chayla. He went to Rabbi Lazar, and he saw that Rabbi Lazar was crying. And Rabbi Yochanan asked Rabbi Lazar, why are you crying? He says, is it because you didn't learn so much Torah? Is it because you were never a gvir? You had a lot of Torah, now everybody gets both. Is it because you don't, your children, your naches? Rabbi Yochanan pulled out the bone of his 10th son and he told him, look at what I've gone through. Trust me, it's not so bad. So Rabbi Lazar tells Rabbi Yochanan, it's not why I'm crying. It's not because of my naches. It's not because of my parnasa. It's not because of my Torah. He says, so why are you crying? So he turned to him and he told him, L'hai shufra the boli barab kabachina. He said, because you, Rabbi Yochanan, you're so handsome and you're going to die one day and I just can't. I can't look at you. Someone so handsome like you is one day going to die. L'hai shufra the boli. I think the Marsha, how do you understand Pashup Shad in this Gemara? It says the Marsha, Shad in the Gemara is based on another Gemara. The Gemara in Masechtas Bava Metzia Daf Pei Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara over there talks about how handsome Rabbi Yochanan was. And the Gemara is mocked him up by saying, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ano Ishtairi Mishviri Yerushalayim. So apparently there were very handsome people in Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Yochanan said that from all the Shviri the Yerushalayim that were roaming the streets back in the day while the Beis HaMikdash stood, I'm the last survivor. I'm the last person that's from the Shviri di Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Yochanan wasn't just handsome. He was from the Shviri di Yerushalayim. Says the Marsha something so profound. Rabbi Lazar looked at Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar said that as long as you, Rabbi Yochanan, are alive, you're a link. You connect people. You connect people to the Zman of the Beis HaMikdash. People see you, they see the Shviri di Yerushalayim. But when you die, Rabbi Yochanan, Al Hai Shufra de Balabara, there's going to be no remaining survivors. There's going to be no Holocaust survivors, so to speak, that people can go and see numbers on an arm and they could say, this is living testimony, evidence of the Churban that once upon a time took place, of a generation that was so different than the generation that we live in right now. It wasn't the handsomeness of Rabbi Yochanan that Rabbi Lazar was worried about on his deathbed. Rabbi Lazar was saying that as long as you're alive, there's a connection. But Al Hai Shufra the Baal of Ara, when you die, Rabbi Yochanan, you're the last remaining survivor of the Shviri the Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yochanan didn't witness Churban Beis HaMikdash, but apparently he was from the Shviri Yerushalayim. He represented that. And that's something that will be lost when you die. And that's why he cried. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan said, if that's why you're crying, they both cried. Rabbi Yochanan cried, and Rabbi Elazar cried. They sat together, and they cried, Rabbi Yankel Galinsky, so he gave a famous hesped on the stipel. We mentioned it in the daf not so long ago. But there was a second hesped that he gave, short while afterwards, on the three G'dayli Adar that passed away that same year. The Stipler, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. And in that hesped he said over this marshal. And he said that Rav Moshe, Rabbi Yaakov, the Stipler, it's not just three G'dayim that passed away. These are people that on their shoulders are carrying a Messiah from a previous generation. They represent a world that doesn't exist anymore. And to lose three G'dayim like that, it's Al-Hai Shufra, the Bola Ba'ira. That was the hergish that Yanko Galinsky had when these three G'dayim passed away. But I just wanted to say, one ha'ara, just one ha'ara. And that is that there's a marsha in the Masechta Sanhedrin that Tzadik Zayin Amud Beis. Again, we've spoken about this marsha many times. The Gemara over there says that the world was created for 6,000 years. 2,000 years. It's a ton of value. The first 2,000 years, the world was Toyu B'lay Tayr. There was no Tayr in the world. In the year 2000, Avram Avinu begins spreading the word, Vanefesh Asha Asu B'charen. That's when Tayr comes into the world. And for the next 2,000 years, there was Tayr. The last 2,000 years, says the Gemara, Yomoy Samashiach. So you can take the 6,000 years, right now we're 5777, but you can take the 6,000 years and you can divide it into three groups. 2,000 years, Tayyub Alei Torah. 2,000 years, Torah. And then the last 2,000 years, Yomoy Samashiach. Says Rashi, that Avada, when we say the last 2,000 years at Yomoy Samashiach, we don't mean there's no Torah. There's Torah as well. It means this Torah plus now already Mashiach could come, and now it's already going to be considered. Now it's already going to be considered Yomei Samashiach as well. But I've added this Torah during the last 2,000 years. Zokti Mashach, which I guess not Mashma that way, Rashi. I don't agree with you because it sounds like each 2,000 years are exclusive. The first 2,000 years were unique. They were unique in the sense no Torah. The last 2,000 years are unique in that it's Yomei Samashiach. The first 4,000 years are not Yomei Samashiach. It's unique to that 2,000-year period of the world. So the first 2,000 years are unique. The last 2,000 years of the world, it's mashma, but the middle 2,000 years are unique as well. So if the middle 2,000 years are the years of Torah, it sounds like it's only those 2,000 years that are the years of Torah. The last 2,000 years are not going to be years of Torah. We have Torah. Zokta Mashah. It's true we have Torah today, but the Torah that we have today is not in the same madriga as the Torah we had for the middle 2,000 years. In the middle 2,000 years, there was a Beis HaMikdash. There was a Gilui. There was Hiskalos, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, we're living in Eretz Yisrael, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. But when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Malko v'Soreh v'Agoyim Ein Torah, says the Pasuk in Eicha. At that point, when the Yidden went to Golus, it was Ein Torah. The Yerida in Torah was so phenomenal. It was so incredible. It was so incredible that the Madrega of Torah fell to the point that we can actually refer to it as Ein Torah. So it says the Masha, the last 2,000 years there's no Torah. Either is Torah, it's not on the same level. Because during the last 2,000 years there's no Beis HaMikdash, and Malka V'Soreh Bagoyim Ein Torah. Says the Masha, it's great, right? The problem is if you do the math, it doesn't work out. Because if you do the math, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Kuf Ayim Beis Shonim, 172 years before Churban Bayis Sheni. So if it's 100 in after Churban Bayis Sheni, the meaning the year 4,000 is 172 years after the Churban Bayis. And you're telling me now that when did we go to a state of Ein Torah? When it was Malkus Rabba Goyim by the Churban. So those 172 years seem to be out of place. I mean, it has to work. We're not rounding off numbers. L'chur, it has to work. Now, if Churban Beis HaMikdash was in the year 4,000, we have a beautiful Marsha. But being that Churban Beis HaMikdash was 172 years before the year 4,000, so how could you tell me that the 4,000 is related to Churban Beis HaMikdash? If that's the case, then there should have been no Torah already 172 years earlier, says the Marsha. Listen to this. Ki be'emes, achash ha'golu Yisrael, golus gemura, ein behem Torah. Once the Eden went to golus gemura, there's no Torah. Ki dechsev, malko v'sareh bagoyim, ein Torah. Mikol mokim, however, kuf ayin beis shonim, achar bayasheni, mikri adayim miyoshnois Torah. For the 172 years after Bayis Sheni, it was still considered years of Torah. Ki oz hoyu doirat hanot, because the Tanaim lived then. Va'adayin lo yinizdal b'la yeshivas. And there were yeshivas. Ad achash emes Rebbe. Until Rebbe died. V'gavar ha'golos. And then golos came in. V'rabu ha'tzorois. V'kolu yimei ha'torah. That's when the yimei ha'torah ceased. U'misham ve'elach. Mitoich ha'golos v'ha'tzorois. B'chalo yisiz man. Rabbi lovei Mashiach. V'imei chevei Mashiach. Etc. etc. Says Masha, you're right. Really it should end 172 years earlier. But for the next 172 years, there's still Torah. You know why? Because you had Rebbe, you had the yeshivas, you still had the Dor of the Tanaim. When Rebbe died, the last of the Tanaim died, it was at that point that there was already no Torah. So the Malka v'Sareb HaGoyim didn't kick in when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It lasted another 172 years. It lasted until Rebbe died. What was so unique about when Rebbe died? When Rebbe died, Kolu Yimei HaTanaim, Rebbe's Talmidim are now going to be the Amoron. There's the passing over to the torch. Now we're going to come for Soka. So we learned about Rav Tanu Upalik, Rabbi Yochanan, Rebbe's Talmidim. Rebbe was the last of the Tanar. Rebbe's Talmidim were the Amoron. That means when Rebbe died and passed over the torch to his Talmidim, it wasn't just another Dar Hailech Vidarba. There's always a Dar Hailech Vidarba. But this was much more significant. We went from the Dor of the Tanoim to the Dor of the Amoron. Why is that significant? It's significant because an Amoron can argue with a Tana. Three quarters of Shas is predicated on the fact that this Tanoim and this Amoron. And you have to know who's a Tana and who's a Amoron. And we spoke out read. It's confusing. Rabbi Yochanan, Rav, some Geshmak, Rabbi Chaim gets involved. Right, this festerade over here about the Tanoim and the Amoron. But the point is that when Rebbe passed away, there was a passing over the torch from the Tanoim and Amoron. And it was so significant, it created a tremendous chiddush in Churban Beis HaMikdash. What was the chiddush? It went, Malkav Esarel, Bagoyim, that's when that went into effect. It didn't happen when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. When did it happen? It happened when Rebbe died. So I was thinking, maybe that's the teretz of this medrash. It's so gavaldic. The medrash says, Rabbi Yochanan, Havadorah Shitin Appen, Bebila Hashem Aleichomo. Rabbi Yochanan, when he got up to Darshan in his Kehillah, his Shabbos Chazon Drasha, was 60 representations of Bila Hashem Aleichomo. Rebbe? Only Darshan 22. And what's the kash? At first glance, it should have been just the opposite. Rebbe, who was closer, so it was more of an Avelus Chadasha, he should have Darshan more. For Rabbi Yochanan, it's an Avelus Yeshana. He's one generation further. He should have said less. So he said, oh, Rabbi Shuaba said from his father, no, the further you are, the more you need to do in order to be Ma'ira. But it could be it's not true. It could be for Rabbi Yochanan Fakert, it was an Avelus Chadasha. That it wasn't for Rebbe. Where was the Avelus Chadasha? Because the Malkav Asareb Bagoyin ain't Torah. That Chiddush of Churban Beis HaMikdash didn't happen in Rebbe's Dar. When did it happen, Dr. Marashah? Precisely when Rebbe died. So Rebbe only said 22 Pshatim. But Rabbi Yochanan, he looked at his Dar. And he said, Rabbi Isai, the best we could strive for now is to be an Amoira. That's our maximum upside now. Why? Because Churban Beis HaMikdash was just Mitosef. It went now to a Malkav Esareh Bagoyim Ein Torah. That was something Rabbi Yochanan and his Chaverim experienced. So now Rabbi Yochanan had to mourn this Avelus Chadasha. How did he mourn this Avelus Chadasha? Not just by saying 22 Pshatim and Bila Hashem Aleichamol, but he said 60 Pshatim. Bila Hashem v'lo ichamo.